Hello, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
All right, nice to hear your voices. All right, so we have wrapped up Attack Lab. How did that go for you all?
Wasn't as fun as I thought it would be.
Not as fun as you thought it would be. Oh, well, I guess we should lower your expectations then, huh? But I'm interested in why you say that. I won't hold against you.
I don't know. I assumed it was going to be a whole lot like Bomb Lab, which I thought was fun, but it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, so... Well, I mean, I think I know the ways in which it's different, but you're not as much being the detective and studying the assembly as much as you are, attacking it, exploiting it. So really your exploit, your exploit string is really what you spend a ton of time with, right?
Right.
Well, any other thoughts from Donald or the rest of y'all?
It was a little more stressful than the others because I was doing like a lot of trial and error. Like I had the right idea, but especially phase four, finding the exact like memory address, like I had to iterate through a bunch of memory addresses, and I wasn't sure if I was converting the hexadecimal values correctly or not, which was kind of stressful.
I agree. It was a lot of trial and error for phase four.
All right. Well, yeah, so that's specifically return-oriented programming, ROP. And yeah, you are dealing, memory addresses is exactly the issue, and you know, they're big, awkward numbers sometimes, right? Yeah, well, interesting you mentioned that though, because yeah, ROP is something that, it's a fairly new idea. And if you look at the Attack Lab write-up, there's actually like a citation at the end, or I think at two of them perhaps, on ROP. And this is something that was, it did not exist maybe 10 or 12 years ago. The earlier editions of our textbook didn't have anything about ROP because no one had thought of it. This idea that you would write a program, write code, but not by writing code, but only in memory addresses. So normally when you write a program, you'd write it in a language, you use a compiler. But even if you're writing a program in assembly, you would provide a bunch of instructions as code to, hey, processor, do this. But when you're doing ROP, like you did in phase four and phase five, if you got that one, you still wrote a program. I mean, you made the computer do some things, but you only did it by providing memory addresses instead of instructions. So that's totally different. And, it's kind of a big... idea when planned. And I think at the time it was definitely like, how is this even possible? How do you do this? And yeah, you have to dig up these memory addresses. I mean, it's like harder than writing a program a normal way, right? But it turns out there's, since then we have, we have tools that make this easier. So the same way that, I think GDB has gotten more powerful with various tools. There are tools for doing return-oriented programming, like finding a gadget or just helping you organize memory addresses. And that's actually something we want to come back to. David and I have been discussing some of these tools for doing ROP that that we've seen recently. And so I think next week we're going to talk about some of those. So it doesn't have to be quite as difficult. But now you definitely know how ROP works, right?
Kind of.
We'll show you some tools because, all of these things, are difficult. And that's like what we do in computer science, is like make good tools when we come up with these difficult ideas, right? I mean, like our, you know, we could just have spent the last like 40 years writing programs in assembly the whole time, but we've made better compilers and we've made better debuggers and we don't have to do that anymore. Well, I mean, ROP has only been around a little while, but we already have better tools for it, and we'll show you some of those. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, so I'm glad it was kind of enjoyable, but not as fun as you wanted it to be. Any other thoughts? Okay, I'm going to get our slides up, which requires me to change some settings. Here we go. So here we are. We have finished talking about overflows and the more important implications of how call and return works, which is what makes all of this possible. And some of the history of overflows and how finally got to this return-oriented programming idea. So our last part of chapter 3 that we're going to look at with you, which is really a huge part of what we've done this semester, really machine-level stuff, machine-level programs, from how data is stored, how instructions work, how control flow works, how call and return works. Well, this last part of looking at the machine level of software is data structures. So, of course, have you all taken a course called Data Structures?
Yeah, currently taking it.
Currently taking it. Cool. Okay.
I have.
So either you have or you are, or maybe you are very soon. But yeah, this is like a core central course in your computer science education. And so I'm sure you are familiar with a number of data structures, such as, you know, trees and, we're going to start by talking about arrays, and we're going to really just talk about the basic building blocks of data structures. But I think that you know why these things are important and are used all the time. So, as usual, we're going to look at the building blocks. So, let me first make our announcements before I forget. Do you know about course evaluations? This is done every semester, and they are open now. So don't wait until the semester is over, because that is not how course evaluations work. So these will be available, I think, for another week or week and a half. But you can't wait till exams. Please do fill this out. You do it on WebStar. Have you done this previous semesters, or have you done this for your other classes yet?
Yeah.
So, you know what this looks like. We want to know, what's good and what's bad. And this is confidential and anonymous. So, you do not have to say what you think I want to hear, or what anyone else wants to hear. In fact, the way it works is that they are not, these evaluations are not unsealed until after the semester has ended and grades are in. So there's no way that your grade can be influenced by what you say here. And your name will be kept, anonymous the whole time. On the flip side, what that means is that I cannot, reward you for saying nice things to try and influence you either. So that's part of why you can't wait till the semester's over and your grades are in, so that I can't, like, bribe you to say nice things. So, what you say needs to be about the course and not, influenced by, any agendas that you or I may have. So that's why it works this way. This is what it looks like in WebStar. You have to go to this drop-down menu. It's not super obvious at first, but that's where it is. There are a bunch of questions that look like this that you sort of gauge on a scale. But I think more importantly, you know, the free response questions where you describe what has and hasn't gone well is great. And I know all instructors appreciate this, and it really does matter if you, you know, you're all computer science majors and you'll all be taking more computer science courses. So if you want the rest of your courses to be more like one thing and less like another, you definitely need to say something. This does affect, you know, what happens in future semesters. So will you evaluate your courses? Do so soon, please. Okay, so I had, these are attack lab announcements, but of course we were finished with this, so I think I showed you all this stuff already. So we are talking about low-level data stuff. So we will start with arrays, which I'm sure you have seen a lot of in various computer science courses. So we'll start this thing that says basic principle. So it's a little bit generic. So T A square brackets L semicolon might seem a little cryptic or brief at first, but that is the broad definition of what an array could be. So every array has some type that's represented by the letter T here. Some type T, which, you know, in our declaration is we put the type first. Then some identifier, some name, in this case the letter A, but, you know, usually something more than that, something descriptive, but something that you choose. And then some length, L. And then, again, the notation we use in C and so many other programming languages since then, the length goes after the name in the square brackets. So arrays, of course, they have a name, but also a type and a length. And the type and length are both crucial to like what they are. So when we talk about arrays, we're going to talk about their type and their length. And then what is the array? Well, it is a region of memory in which we can store information, but it is contiguous, meaning that all of the elements of this array are adjacent to each other, next to each other in memory. And we have a few diagrams of that here. So first up, string. Its name is string, but its type is character or char or char, if you want to pronounce it that way. But that's short for character, and it is length 12. And you may recall, as we mentioned in the past, and there's a little table in the book, but characters are 1 byte long, so there are not that many possible characters in the ASCII set, which of course is quite limited and quite old. So in order to make characters outside of that very limited alphabet, such as characters in languages not using the Latin alphabet, such as diacritical marks, all those sorts of things actually require more than 1 byte and are part of a system called Unicode. But that's not what we're talking about here with characters. We're talking about the simple basic characters from the old days, you know, lowercase a through z, capital A through z, some digits, some symbols, etc. So they're only represented by 1 byte. There's just not that many possible characters. So in this case, with a string, a name string, an array of 12 characters starts at some position X. And these diagrams say X. Of course, that is a placeholder for some memory address, some large number. Of course, you've just got done dealing with memory addresses in Attack Lab. And as some of you mentioned, sometimes that was a bit awkward. These memory addresses are large numbers that we usually refer to in hexadecimal. But in this case, we just have the letter X just as a placeholder, but this could be, you know, one of these numbers you saw in Attack Lab, like 400000, something like that, or 55 something, or 7FF. So some address, and then So if this thing's string of zero would contain the first character. So if we were, writing the word allocation like here, the letter A would be at that first position, which we would say A of zero, and then the letter L would be in the next position, and so on. So pretty simple, right? Now, it's I think important to note here that the string here is the name of this array. There is no type called string in C. There is such a type in other programming languages. But C, you know, treats characters as individual things, and then a group of characters would just be an array of characters, which we kind of tend to refer to as a string. A string is really just made up of individual characters. So, and we'll, you know, we've come across that a few times and we'll continue to see that. So, that's about all I can say about this so far. Or can you guys think of anything that I'm missing? Probably more than you thought I could say about something as simple as 12 characters. Next, we have an array of 5 ints. The type is int, and the length is 5, and the name is val. So again, assuming some starting position x, really some big memory address, val of 0 would be, if it's starting at that place, x. Well, the next thing in the array, val of 1, well, that's going to be at x plus 4. Reason is, and as you saw in great detail in Datalab, ints are 4 bytes long, so there are 4 billion possible ones or so. And so it requires 4 bytes to store the first one, and then 4 bytes to store the next one, etc. So x has val of 0, x plus 4 has val of 1, x plus 8 has val of 2, and so on. So that's why we have these little arrows pointing at the intervals within this region, but there are 20 total bytes of memory to store 5 ints. It took 12 bytes of memory to hold 12 characters, but 20 bytes to hold 5 ints. Because ints are longer, there are more possible values. And this would be true of signed or unsigned ints, in fact. But in this case, int by itself implies signed int. But 4-byte ints are not the only numeric data type. We have double precision floating point values, which are defined to be 8 bytes according to the floating point standard. Of course, we have 8-byte ints also called long ints. If we're storing 3 8-byte double precision values, well, 8 bytes times 3, this total 24. So it takes 24 bytes to store 3 doubles. And one other thing we'll look at is, but where does each one start? Well, first one at x, but then the next one, a of 1, would be at x plus 8. A of 2 would be at x plus 16, which happens to be 2 times 8. So the array index 2 would refer to 2 times that size of that data type. So that's what this little formula thing here is. Size of double would be 8. So we multiply by 8 for each sort of step in that array. And then finally, you have this thing at the bottom. What do y'all make of that? P. What is P here?
Is that a pointer, stack pointer of some sort?
Yeah, so yes, pointer is correct. Stack pointer is a little bit more specific to the thing in assembly. So really just pointer by itself is correct. And we know that from that star character. So that is not the same as just the one on top, which is just an array of characters. But this thing is, so of type pointer, but not just any pointer, it's a pointer to type character. Length is 3. So how do we explain this 24 bytes? Like 12 characters was 12 bytes, but 3 pointers is 24 bytes. How does this make any sense? You actually can kind of think about your experience in Attack Lab with this, because you had to write out individual bytes in your exploit that you sent to Hextraw. So you kind of, you know, very like concretely on your screen saw the length of addresses. And that's really what a pointer is. And so, you know, you just got done dealing with a lot of addresses in your Attack Lab, and a pointer really, you know, is an address. So if an address is 8 bytes long, which it is on our 64-bit systems, and, you know, I think, again, you would have seen this using up 8 bytes of buffer on your stack attack. So each address of a character is 8 bytes long, so storing one pointer requires 8 bytes. On older systems, it would be 4 bytes. Another pointer at x plus 8, and a third one at x plus 16. So that is an array of 3 pointers to characters. Now, sometimes we use the term string in C to refer to a pointer to a character, because there's not a data type string, but a pointer to a character can be treated as the first of many letters in a string. So from that address until some ending marker, the null character. It looks very similar to P and string look similar, but the types are actually very different. A pointer to character and a pointer to, and just a string of 12. So what this means is that if you had a bunch of 12 character arrays of characters, 12 byte arrays of characters, you could put the address of one of them at X at P of 0. And then dereferencing that would take you to that that array of characters. And you could put a different address at x plus 8. And if that's a different address, that could be a different array of characters. So you could say, you know, if you had one word in this thing, string of 12 had allocation, and some other array had the word principal in it, you could point to different ones in this array of pointers called P.
So would this be kind of like a 2D array?
That's a good question. So you could think of it that way. Yeah. It's pointers make it a little bit indirect. So in a 2D array, we would say like, okay, so there's an array inside an array, but in this case, there's not an array of characters. You know, P of 0 is not, the characters are not actually in there, just a reference to them as the address. So it's not exactly a two-dimensional array, but it is close. That's an interesting question, but it's I guess I would say it's indirect, because there really is like a reference here to some other string rather than the actual bytes themselves. Whereas we could have, and it's easier to look at this with numbers to say like, and I actually have an example coming up for you of a two-dimensional or a multi-dimensional array of ints, in which case, like, if there are 5 ints in val, and then there's some array of vals or some array of 5 byte five int arrays, then, you know, you'd have 20 bytes and then another 20 bytes and so on. So I have a diagram of that coming up. So it's a very interesting question. It's almost a two-dimensional array, but not quite. I will show you a two-dimensional array, because the normal 2D array is not going to contain pointers or indirect stuff. But it's very close. So it's an interesting question. I appreciate it. But I'm thinking about it. Other stuff? Okay. So, let's talk about, talk about links a little bit more. 'Cause one of the questions that, we ask about well, there's a few things we can ask about these things. So a type and a value. So and I think I do want to emphasize that types are very important when reasoning about programs, especially about their correctness. And I think I mentioned, you know, type safety is a like important property in making secure programs that are less vulnerable to attacks like we saw in Attack Lab. But let's look at these types here. So in this left column, and this would normally be kind of fun if we were all together in the classroom to sort of use as a little quiz kind of brain wake up thing. But let's play along anyway. Let's just think together. If we have something, you know, from the previous slide, a thing called val, it's an array of length 5 of type int. So when we see val of 4, val 4 in square brackets, what, you know, we want to ask two things. You know, if we're just trying to figure out what this means and how to read this and how to expect it to behave in our programs. Val of 4, well, let's ask both what its type and what its value is. Now, in this example, we have given values to these 5 ints in val, a 1, a 5, a 2, a 1, and a 3. They're all very small numbers, but useful for examples. So we would say val, well, we're not talking about the whole array. We're just talking about a member of val, val of 4. So it has type int, and the value is 3. You know, again, recall that the one here, the first one is val of 0, and then val of 1 is the 5, val of 2 is the 2, val of 3 is the 1, val of 4 is the 3. So even though it's of length 5, we're, you know, the last one is 4 and the first one is 0, right? Okay, just y'all have dealt with arrays starting at 0 before, just a little reminder. So this is kind of the most direct way to say, okay, we've grabbed one of those elements by using its index 4, and that's how we got that 3. We now have accessed this 3 in that array. So you've done this in Java, of course, right?
Right.
Excellent. Okay. But there are other ways to look at these arrays. So first of all, if we just talk about val by itself with no array index, well, what does that mean? Have you ever kind of treat an array like this without using its, you know, index?
Would it be some sort of like, would it just return the, like the memory address of the array?
Ah, an interesting idea. And you are correct. So yes, a memory address. Now, you know, so that address here is X. Of course, you know, we'd have a real number in a big program. You could run GDB and find it. You know how to do that. We're going to call it X so it fits on the slide, not some giant thing. So yes, exactly. Val by itself, well, really just talks about the address where this starts. Now, when we have type here, it says type int star. Looks a lot like int, but as I just got done saying, that star makes a change there. And yes, we would read that as pointer, as you guys recognized on the previous slide. But again, what is a pointer? It's an address, just like Emmanuel said. So yes, X is an address, and val has type and pointer, and that, you know, were you to print it or use it in some way, it would be that memory address. So, very good. This slide is working out as a way to kind of make you think. Ready for another one? Let's look at, okay, so what does this mean? Val plus 1. Because like if I said val of 4 plus 1, well, that's 3 plus 1, right? But like, you know, but we're not talking about 3 plus 1. We're not talking about val of 4 plus 1. What would this be?
So would it just take that memory address and then just go to the, I guess, just plus 4 of that memory address, or plus 1, I mean.
Well, that's an interesting, we could, either one could be right, actually. And it turns out your first instinct was right. So actually, plus 4 And but that's this is a you know a choice that you know, and this is a rule of how C deals with these things. So yes, the type is still int star, meaning it's still an address because val was an address, and it's an address until we dereference it, and that array index that square bracket with 4 in it turns an address into a value by dereferencing it. So val by itself is a pointer. Val plus 1 is also a pointer, meaning it's also an address. This is actually a thing called pointer arithmetic. You can do an add on a pointer because it really is just a memory address. But val plus 1, taking x and moving up one byte, would really not be so useful here because x, you know, there are 4 bytes to store this first int. And so x plus 1 would just be kind of like in the middle of this int. And of course, you know, you've done data lab and you know you could grab a certain byte out of the middle of an int and shift it around and do stuff with it. But that's not the common way. And, you know, if you really wanted to do that, you could using shift operators and masking and all that. But the normal behavior with pointers and arrays is to say, well, val plus 1, we want to take the next element of type int. And so since we know val is of type int star, adding 1 to that pointer means go to the next thing. And if we know a thing is 4 bytes, then the compiler knows that really what val plus 1 should mean is x plus 4, move up 4 bytes based on the type, knowing that ints are 4 bytes. So I kind of like that you considered both because you can totally see how you would, you know, you could go either way here. And again, the C compiler's decision is that a plus 1 on an int pointer will go up 1 length of an int, you know. So if we were talking about an array of doubles and you did a plus 1 on that pointer, it would move up 8 bytes. So that plus 4 depends on the type and the length of that particular data type. So,
excuse me.
Yes.
So for example, like if it was val plus 2, it's just going to, it's the plus 1 is like moving to the next index space, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if it was val plus 2, then you're really doing it's dereferencing it as x plus 8.
Well, except not dereferencing, because it's still an address. Yes, but yes, val plus 2 would be x plus 8 here, exactly. But it's still an address, so it's not dereferenced until we change address into value. So again, you know, val plus 2 would be x plus 8, but it would not be the number 2, which is at that address. But you guys are anticipating great because that's where we're going next with this. So, because, you know, we don't always want to deal with addresses. A lot of times we want to get the values from those addresses, which we call dereferencing. The thing val of 4 we saw is the most common way, but, well, there's a few other things. So, well, one more thing about addresses, actually. So, if val of 4 is an int, well, val of 2 is also an int. But we have this ampersand thing. Do you remember it from back? I can't remember. It's been, what, several weeks since we talked about the old ampersand, right?
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I don't really remember what it was for.
Yeah, and that reminds me that I would like to, perhaps on our next class, I'll bring back our slides about pointers that I would have liked to spend more time on before. So we'll do a recap on that. But this is the address of operator. I just wanted to put that in quotes on the slide. Address of, but we can actually read this. If there's val of 2, if there's an ampersand in front of it, that's address of val of 2. So that takes a regular int, you know, again, val of 2 here would be, you know, the number 2, but instead of giving us the value 2, it gives us the address. So now the type is int star, pointer to int. So we've taken a value and made it into a reference or made it into a pointer. So, and that is x plus 8. Now, so, you know, again, if you were to print val of 2, you'd get the number 2. But if you print address of val of 2, you get this big number x plus 8 a little ways into it. So, incidentally, this looks very similar. We just talked about what if you did val plus 2, right? And I think that was Donald, right? You said x plus 8, right? Mm-hmm. So, that's exactly val plus 2 and address of val of 2 are equivalent. So different notations here. What do you think? So these are all pointer stuff. So I think we can go back to stuff that's not quite pointers, but what do you make of this? Vowel of five. So type is like vowel of four, it's an int. What would it be? 1, 5, 2, 1, 3. Well, it's not any of those actually. So it has type int. What is its value? Well, we don't know because it's off the end. We've only defined, you know, vowel of 0, vowel of 1, 2, 3, and vowel of 4. Vowel of 5, well, so is it, I know what this would be in Java, right? This would be like array index out of bound exception, right? Have you gotten that exception in Java programs?
Yeah.
Did I give it the right name? It's been a little while for me. But something like array index out of bounds. So that exception and does not exist in C. In fact, exceptions of that sort don't come along until more modern programming languages. So vowel of five does not cause the program to abort or anything like that. Not necessarily. Vowel of five is just whatever is at address x plus 20. So if there was some other array there or even like some other stuff there, it would just print out that. Now, if it just so happened that x plus 20 was the end of the memory space for that program, then you'd get a segmentation fault. And if you did val of some giant number, you know, sooner or later you will go too far and you'll end up with a segmentation fault. So, which, you know, you've written C programs, right? Doesn't it suck when you get a segmentation fault? Going too far with an array index in a C program, you're not going to get an exception as soon as you go over. But you may get a weird value or you may get segmentation faults. Now this is an interesting notation. So we already talked about val plus one. So we have that up higher in the table, x plus four. If val plus one has type int star, meaning it's an address, and we know what that address is relative to x. So if val plus one is an address, if we take that address and put it in parentheses and put the star in front of it, what could this mean? Well, again, I'll bring back our, we'll do a little review on the pointers from back when, but if the ampersand is the address of operator, then the star, well, in the context of a type, the star means pointer. But you put the star in front of a name or in front of an array or in front of a pointer, like val, that is the dereference operator. So we are saying take val plus one, which we know is an address, x plus four, and dereference it. By dereference, we mean go get the thing at that address. So val plus one is x plus four. Well, that's an address, but what is the thing at that address? The five, the number five. So again, this notation might look weird at first. You're taking vowel, adding one to it, and then putting a star in front of it. What? That is the number five. That's what, you know, if you were to take this and print it in your program, you'd get the number five. I don't know. What do you think? Would you have guessed that? Would you have written your program this way? What this means, you know, I mean, wouldn't, if you were trying to access the number five, wouldn't you just say val square brackets one, val of one?
Right.
Yeah. So, we're just kind of pointing out that these are equivalent to each other. In fact, the array square brackets notation is, you know, optional. You don't have to use it that way. It happens to be convenient. We have the square bracket notation because it's way better for us to write, you know, val of four in square brackets than it is to say, okay, take val, some address, go some distance forward from that address, one in this case, which is 4 bytes, one thing, and then dereference. But I think it's useful to say, it's useful to know when you're using an array index like val of 4, what you're really saying is take val, go forward 4 things, 4 ints in this case, which would take you to x plus 16, but then dereference, because the array angle brackets mean say also dereference. So get the thing at val of 4, or in this case, get the thing at val plus 1, the number 5. So the thing on the bottom here with the star and the parentheses is equivalent to the thing on the top, except that a 1 instead of a 4. Using array indices and doing pointing dereferences are equivalent. So that's kind of the really the low level way of looking at arrays. So finally, we have a generic question of for some value I, what is its type and value when we have val plus I for some int I. And so we have a generic formula for this. So first of all, it is if val plus 1 was int star, well, val plus any number is type int star. So we know the type. And the value is, and you can probably figure this out by now because we see the pattern before. Val starts at x, and then you add 4 for every 1 I. So for every, val plus 1 is plus 4, val plus 2 is plus 8, etc. So even for a large array, there's a kind of simple formula for how adding to val changes the address. So, bet you didn't think there were that many ways to look at an array. But hopefully this gives you the real like basic building blocks for how arrays are made and made from pointers. And when we look at compiled programs, when we look at, disassembled programs, we're just going to see a lot of memory addresses and a lot of like adds and dereferences of those memory addresses. So, remember last semester I said this once, and I like that I got this response of what are you talking about? I know that's a good sign when people say that back to me. I said there's no such thing as arrays, and computer science students looked at me like, what are you talking about? Really, what I said is there's no arrays in assembly, and everyone's like, but we just came out of assembly and we wrote programs with arrays. Well, yes, but really those arrays were just addresses with offsets. So really, in assembly, you just have pointers. And which is to say these addresses, and then you can do an add on them to go further in the array. So like, yes, arrays exist, but we've invented them. We've built them out of pointers, and these little manipulations of pointers and dereferences of pointers. So, everything's pointers actually. I don't know how y'all feel about that, but, when you really take things apart, that's what we have left. Anything else y'all want to talk about with this? Anything seem weird on here? So, check it out. I have my bottle back. Y'all remember this bottle? I got it back. I'm excited. So pointers everywhere. I like that. They are everywhere, all the way down. Okay. So, here's a few more arrays to look at. So let's just look at the C code. First of all, the define thing on the top line here, this is a preprocessor command. If you remember CPP, the preprocessor from way back at the beginning of the semester. So we can say we want the preprocessor to go through and replace, capital Z lin with the number 5. That's a way that C programs often put constants that are going to be compiled in later. So what we're saying is there is this array zip dig of length 5, and the kind of token example here is using a 5-digit value that we're familiar with, the zip code, the postal code. But there's this type def thing. You may not have seen this. It's really not that special, but it's a shorthand. It's basically saying we can make a new type name called zipdig, and it will now be treated as a type. But what is that really? It will be represented by an array of ints, an array of five ints here. So really, when we say zipdig CMU, that says, well, really, it's of type int array of length five. We'll kind of see why it's useful to do that in a second. But we have three of these things, and this is the same five-digit int array that we were just looking at before, but now we have three different ones, each of them with numbers. Now, you know, in this case, the number here is one, but this could be any int from negative 2 billion to positive 2 billion. You all remember the range of ints. So don't be too deceived by the fact that we're using small ones on this slide. So we're not talking about the number 15,213. We're talking about a first, you know, CMU of zero, CMU of one, et cetera, MIT of zero, MIT of one, UCB of zero, UCB of one, et cetera. So each of these arrays starts at some point, you know, before we call this X, but here we'll say, well, this is 16 through 36, and then 36 through 56, 56 through 76. So this is, like I said, the zipdig type is array of length five. Now, in this case, arrays are always, you know, the five members of that array will always be contiguous next to each other in memory. The three different arrays don't have to be. That's why it says not guaranteed to happen in general, although it does in this case when the compiler puts this together and replaces the names of the addresses. But let's see what this looks like when it's compiled and when we actually run it and when we debug it in GDB and when we disassemble and when we start looking at what is this program really doing. What are we going to see? So let's just talk about how to access a member of an array. We kind of did this, you know, informally before, but using assembly instructions now. So we have some function getDigit. Its job is really just to access a member of an array. Of course, you don't need a whole function to do that, but it's useful here to see what it turns out with. For one thing, we know when an array is called that RDI is the first in the calling convention, the first argument. So Z will be in the RDI register, and then digit will be in the RSI register, which is the array index here. So if we look at what gets returned here, well, we take the array Z, and of course that is really of type pointer, as we saw before. You know, Z is going to be the address where this thing starts. Which, if it was the first example here, would be 16. But if it was one of the other arrays, it would be 36 or something else. But that starting address, we sometimes call the base address. And then the index added to that times four. So meaning take the index and multiply it by four and then add it, which we saw before, right? So if you have Z of one, you want to go four bytes past the starting point and look at 20. But then we're not just returning the number 20 here. There is a dereference also. So the square brackets mean there's a dereference. And so in assembly also, we see the square bracket and D word pointer. That means dereference this address, take the 20 and look at what's there. And that's going to be, you know, if digit was one, then the value in EX will be five. So, really breaking that down, but that's how arrays get accessed: a base start of the array, and then some offset, some distance into the array, which is index time size. Sound good? Well, I guess one of the last things I'll show you before we get to multidimensional arrays is that here's just a function that goes through a for loop, every element of an array, and does an add to that array. Again, you know, we remember from BombLab and GDB how to disassemble loops. This is, we know how to take this one apart, and we've even put in some comments after the hash symbols. So, you know, there has to be a dereference to actually increment the value inside the array. That's where we see D word pointer here. So there's one dereference inside the loop for each time one is added to some value. So, when we come back to this, we will get to nested or multidimensional arrays, which I'll asked about before. So we'll look at this some more. It does bring us back to copying two arrays, which we did at the very beginning of the semester. This is where we'll pick up, and then we'll also do some more review of pointers, because we just found out that there's pointers everywhere. Everything's made out of pointers. Let's review and make sure we're really strong on pointer stuff. So we'll do that next class, and then please do stick around next week. We will start talking about your final exam, and we'll be nearing the finish line. So stay with it. Good to see everyone on the class today, and nice to hear your voices. Stay in touch, and be well, please.
Have a nice day.
Thanks, you too.
Yep, thanks, will do.
You have a good day.
All right.